She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And just another little reminder, we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And certainly our guest today is going to give you some really wonderful call to action things to think about. Her name is Jennifer Deonto-Kemmerly, and she is the director of Seafood Watch at the Monterey Bay Aquarium. How exciting is that? Seriously, welcome, Jennifer.
Oh, thanks for having me, Gina.
Thanks for being on my show. The show is sponsored by Chapman Tucson. If you are looking for a fuel-efficient, clean-burning car, which Mrs. Green would, of course, say, of course, that's what you're looking for, Chapman, they have one. You can check them out by visiting ChapmanTucson.com, and we thank them for their ongoing support of our mission and vision. So we have a few important announcements, and then we'll be on with the show. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network and Castle Rock Radio, and you can visit my website at mrsgreensworld.com/radio-show for weekly listening and times and links to their website. We're happy to be partners with them. We are here live every Saturday at noon, Arizona time, at mrsgreensworld.com, and invite you to join us each week. You can set a little appointment in your phone, and it'll be a reminder that comes up just like it does on mine. You can listen on your iPhone or Droid, and all of the podcasts of the show are on my website for your listening pleasure. Please connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram, because that's where all the news is about great shows like this. And if you have questions for the show, I encourage you to write to me, especially for upcoming shows. I'd love to answer some of your questions. And now here's where I do my shout out about one of our national sponsors, EcoBella. And it really never ceases to amaze me how intertwined everything in Mrs. Green's world truly is. We really are one planet with a finite amount of things that the Earth can provide in some cases, like fish, like plants. There's not an infinite supply. And being partners with a company like EcoBella, who truly gets that and who is walking the walk in terms of the greater good, makes me proud. Like Seafood Watch, EcoBella is watching what they do. They're watching how they do it in their industry in order to bring us safe cosmetics and skincare. I encourage you, and really excitedly encourage you, to check them out at ecobella.com. And I believe that if you like what you see, which of course I believe you will, use the code Mrs. Green on checkout and you'll receive a 10% discount off your entire purchase. And who doesn't like to receive a discount? No, please raise your hand. Okay, Mrs. Green followers, we are launching our first ever Pin It to Win It contest for Earth Month on Monday, April 1st. And one of the things I love about my team is we get so excited about these things because it's another way that we can show up in favor of preservation of the planet. So please visit my website and share with us what on earth moves you. That's the title of our Pin It to Win It contest. It's going to be fun. There are great prizes, and we hope this is a great call to action for you, so much so that you'll share it with your family and friends and coworkers, remembering again that we only have one planet and we can all help take care of it, even by doing something fun like being involved in Pinterest and spreading good messages. And another cool thing that I wanted to do a shout out about, we're working on some really neat things with the Nature Conservancy. And they are doing a picnic for the Earth. Now, how fun is that? It's an initiative that encourages you to plan a picnic during Earth Month and to support local food producers, shop locally grown, and get out and enjoy the beauty of nature, because spring has sprung. I mean, it's really wonderful. And if you want to find more out about what they're doing, I don't think you need help in planning a picnic. It's just a reminder. But they have just visit earthday.nature.org, and you'll find out about the Plan a Picnic Month. And I think that sounds like a heck of a lot of fun. And I can tell you from my point of view, The family picnics that we do and have done are some of the most wonderful memories that our family has had. Me as a child, me as an adult and a parent. So go out and have a picnic in Earth Month. It's exciting to celebrate the Earth and celebrate nature. Okay, there are announcements. Now we are on with the show. Jennifer Dianto-Kemmerly is the director of Seafood Watch at the Monterey Bay Aquarium, which I have to say, Jennifer, I don't know how many people you hear this from, but isn't it one of everybody's favorite places in the world to visit?
Yes, but I'm very biased.
And I'm very biased. Yeah, and I don't work there, but I will tell you, like when from the time we had little kids and then grandkids, it's just a place to put on your bucket list because you can't describe it. So that's my shout out for the Monterey Bay Aquarium. And then you go and do something wonderful like Seafood Watch, which is really not just caring about our health, which it does, but the health of our oceans, which really matters to all of us. So let's make it all about you. And why don't you give an overview of what Seafood Watch is? And it's a three-part question, but I'll be happy to repeat it. How it got started and why did it get started?
Sure. That's a great question. It actually started at the Monterey Bay Aquarium in an exhibit we had from 1997 to 1999. We had an exhibit called Fishing for Solutions, and it talked about some of the threats to marine life and the ocean itself from some fishing practices. But the aquarium really didn't want to go negative with the messaging. You know, we didn't want to just focus on the problem.
Right.
We wanted to focus on the solutions and what fishermen were doing out there, how they were changing their fishing gear to actually help mitigate some of the problems. So what we did in our cafe, in our restaurant at the aquarium, is we put out a list in these table tent cards that said, you know, look, we've researched some of these fisheries. These are the fisheries that are trying to do the right thing. They're not taking too many fish. They're changing the way they use their gear so it doesn't impact the seafloor. And people were taking them from the restaurant. And volunteers at the aquarium, of which we have hundreds, were asking, you know, can you produce these so we can use them when we go shopping or when we go eat in a restaurant? And that's how the Seafood Watch Pocket Guide for Consumers was born.
And one of the things I love that I just have to comment on, instead of taking it all on, you took on fishing, because there's lots of issues involving the ocean, but you took on something that not only could be controlled, but that consumers could grab onto and be a part of. Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's something that in this country, you know, we eat about 16 pounds of seafood per person per year. We eat a lot of fish. And globally, that number spikes even higher as you go into Asia and Europe, of course. So what we're trying to do is, you know, make a difference with our pocketbooks and our choices. And the way that this whole movement, if you will, around sustainable or environmentally responsible seafood has moved over the past 10 years since I've been doing this has been amazing. I think a lot of people ask the question, oh, well, my choices at the point of sale really make a difference. And I just really want to share and commend your audience who has been using the program or programs like it. It has. So in just a decade, we have seen the top retailers and food service companies make commitments to purchasing environmentally responsible seafood because of consumer demand, because people are using the card, they're using the app, they're asking questions. And I'm just overwhelmed with how wonderfully this program has really made some change.
And the part that I want to just say major kudos to you is some people did tell me about this, and we've been wanting to have you on the show for a really long time, is that what you have successfully done, I think consumers are sometimes overwhelmed. There's so much that, you know, you should do this, you should do that, you should do this. You gave it to them in bite-sized chunks, so to speak, so that here's the call to action, here's how you get involved, and here are the steps. And, you know, can we talk a little bit about, I don't want to be, you know, Debbie Downer either, but I think it's really interesting. Your website is like epic. It's easy to navigate. It's content rich. But we do have to bring things up to get people's awareness that one of the things I read, I think, on your website is like something like 90% of shark, swordfish, and what was it, cod, were gone from the oceans in 2003. And there was warning. And so that's like, that's real. That's a real number.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate you bringing that up because this is a real issue. I mean, we wouldn't be putting this much time and energy and push behind a program unless it was really, really needed. I mean, there are species out there that are really on the brink of commercial extinction. And what that means is that there's just not enough of them left to support a fishery anymore. So it's, you know, you're affecting the populations of the fish in the ocean. You're also affecting the communities who fish these species. And there's less flavor on our plates as consumers of seafood and lovers of seafood. So the trickle-down effect is huge. You know, there are some very unfortunate statistics out there that are important to be aware of. The United Nations every year puts out a report, you know, the state of the world fisheries and aquaculture. And right now, there's about 90% of those fish populations out there that are commercially fished that are at their limit. You know, we can't put any more pressure on them. That's it. And the love and joy of eating seafood and the growing population is demanding even more. So where is it going to come from? So what you've seen in the past few decades is aquaculture or fish farming. And right now, about 50% of the seafood we eat is actually farm-raised. And that brings with it a great solution, but it could also unearth some other issues. So, for example, if the runoff from some of these farms is not managed, or if they are floating net pens off the coast, if the waste is not managed there, or if the fish escape, it brings with it a whole host of other potential issues. What Seafood Watch does is we assess the environmental performance of fisheries and fish farms across the globe. And our recommendations inform consumers, look, if you want to support an environmentally responsible fish farming operation or fishery, buy from our Green Best Choices list. Or alternatively, use the Yellow Good Alternatives list, because these are fisheries or farms that might have some issues with them, but we're watching them closely and they are working toward making improvement. But for the items on the red avoid list, give them a break. There are some really key issues. And when you brought up a few minutes ago, some of the sharks in the Mediterranean, some of the tuna stocks, and we just need to lay off for a while. You know, these are wild animals. We are basically hunting. You can only take so much without severely impacting that fishery. So we just ask consumers, give them a rest and they can come back. And we have seen success. We have seen species move out of that red category and into the yellow.
And it's just, I mean, to me, your message is kind of shocking and pejorative and yet so full of hope. That's not a big thing to ask a consumer. Just take a little vacation from this, and this, and it's okay to eat this. And, you know, I'll be honest, I thought I did a lot of really good research, but I didn't realize that how all-encompassing Seafood Watch is. Not that I should be surprised since it's the Monterey Bay Aquarium. So my next question becomes, how do you get, I mean, the response from the consumer you stated has been unbelievable. It started by people taking cards so they would know what to do. It moved into, you actually have a wonderful PDF that people can download and put in their purse or in their pocket or in their car if they're traveling. But what kind of buy-in do you need from businesses, from the commercial fisheries, and how has that been, and how are you doing with that? Because that's got to be critical.
It's been amazing. We spent, I think, between 2006 and 2008, a lot of focused effort on having a conversation with businesses. And when I say we, it's not just Monterey Bay Aquarium.
Right.
We're very fortunate. We have an alliance now of 19 NGOs in North America who are involved in what we're calling the Sustainable Seafood Movement. We're all aligning and trying to work together. And we basically shared the triple bottom line, the benefits to actually making sure you're sourcing from environmentally responsible fisheries and fish farms. You know, yes, it's good for the environment, and it's good for your reputation if you have a corporate social responsibility initiative, you're doing the right thing. But, you know, your protein is it's an inventory. This is an ingredient in things that they sell. If they don't take stock in the inventory and ensure it's going to be around for the future, they're not going to have a center of a plate protein.
That's right. They're writing their closing closing our door, for going out of business sign.
Yeah.
It's really true.
That resonated. Yeah. It's just good business sense. And the companies like Walmart and Compass Group, who you think, you know, might be, they're so big and they're so universal, they would never really be the leaders in this. They have been.
That's awesome.
They have been. And it's because they recognize their purchasing power and their potential impact because they source so much seafood.
They can have such a major impact when they're so big. That's bigger steps they can take.
And, you know, the thing is, now the consumers might think, oh, okay, well, all the businesses are on board, so you don't need me anymore. You know, I can just kind of relax and just do my shopping. But I want to challenge the listeners, please continue, because what the companies are now reporting to us is they need the positive reinforcement. They need to see that the consumer demand is maintained, because it's going to take them a long time to do this. They are sourcing seafood from all over the world, month to month, year to year, different sources. It's very complex and it's hard for them. And it's not without costs. So they need to see that the demand persists in order for them to fully implement their commitment. So it's still just really key and critical. I think we're at the stage in the movement right now where the businesses are demanding sustainable seafood because the consumers are demanding it and they realize the benefits for their company. But it's also now starting to get down to the producer level. And what I mean by that is the companies that make seafood products, like a breaded cod fillet that you might buy in a box, or the actual fishery or fish farming operation, they are now starting to change their practices and get eco-certified, or to at least improve their operations so that they could be rated as a Seafood Watch yellow or green fishery. So that's kind of where we are right now as a program. We're really working at that level of detail. But we still feel like working with the consumer audience is so key. It's
so
a foundation.
Key.
Without the pressure, it folds like a house of cards.
Right. It drives, and the consumers drive the market. And I think that
Absolutely.
Some people, so many different topics I've had on my show, very, very much, you know, committed to buying more and more and more organic. And people have said it's more expensive. And when you really break it down to the reality of what bad food and unhealthy food costs, it's not more expensive. And you have one budget. I like to go through this a little bit, because give up a latte or two during the week. I mean, I was just with my daughter in LA, and I don't drink coffee, but the cost of a latte is between $4 and $5. So
yeah.
That's going to buy a lot of fish for a family if three of you are going in and getting lattes. So for the consumer, I encourage everybody to get that phrase out of your head. And if you want to be having healthy seafood down the road because you love it so much, don't take away my fish. Buy healthy choices. Now, Jennifer, let me ask you this. When someone goes to the store, is there a labeling on it so they can know this is part of the, you know, the group of businesses that participate in healthy fishing and healthy seafood, you know, all of the bells and whistles that you look at to consider before they make your seafood watch list, green, yellow, or red?
Yeah, yes. There is the blue eco label that is issued by the Marine Stewardship Council that consumers can look for at point of sale at a retailer. But we also have, remember this group of NGOs I mentioned earlier,
right.
A lot of them are working with major retailers. So no matter where you are, if in the Northeast and you're at Stop and Shop, or the Southeast at Publix, or the West Coast at Safeway, all three of those companies are working on their sustainable seafood commitments right now. So what we're asking consumers to do is, yes, of course, use the pocket guides, you know, to purchase sustainable seafood. But ask the retailer. Ask them if they are involved in some sort of sustainable seafood program. And, you know, just start asking these questions, because the labeling is not mandatory. And what we're seeing is people still want to know, as they should, where their seafood comes from and whether it's farmed or wild. Now, the Farm Bill in the mid-2000s mandated that at the point of sale at a seafood counter for the large retailers, they have to label the country of origin and whether it's farmed or wild. But there were a lot of caveats there. So if it was a fillet that had some sort of ingredient, or if it was marinated, it's exempt. If it's in the frozen food aisle, it's exempt. So something else that the movement is working on to improve labeling, but consumers do still have to go in and ask questions because the eco labels are not that prevalent yet. And the labeling at point of sale is still lacking.
And it's so exciting to me as a consumer to see the changes when you go into the grocery store, a place like Safeway, and it's like for fruit and vegetables, there's that big old O on there that makes shopping easy and you just go pick it up. And I did a comparison the other day. I was getting things for our team meeting. You know, we used to eat donuts and these really delicious pastry from a locally owned pastry store. And as we evolved in the Mrs. Green team, everybody's like, we don't really want this for our team meeting. So we're buying fresher things. And I spent some time in Safeway looking. And I think that all of the industries are making it easier for the consumer because everybody, you know, everybody's in a hurry and I've got my next meeting to go to and I've got to get home. So that's very encouraging. You know, we are going to have to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about, you know, how do you make sure that businesses are implementing their commitment? And it can be a little bit confusing to know what is sustainable and what isn't. And you know what I mean? And a little bit more about the seafood industry. We have lots to talk. And let us not forget to mention every time that not only do you have a download PDF pocket guide, of course, you have a phone app because there's an app for that.
There's an app for that.
Oh my gosh, I love it. And I'm like, of course, Monterey Bay Seafood Watch has an app for their phone for this, which will make a lot of our listeners happy. So everyone, we are having a wonderful, just lively interview with Jennifer Deonto Kimberly, who's the director of Seafood Watch at the Monterey Bay Aquarium. I am sure that every one of you are going to want to stay here with me and hear more about what she has to share. We'll be right back.
University of Arizona professor John Pollard asked the students in the Posada San Pedro Hall to consider bringing solar energy to the dorm. Just 3 years later, the Solar Cats, a group of students who took up the cause, have installed 44 solar panels on the dorm, saving 20,000 kilowatt hours of energy and reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 14 metric tons every year. Talk about students with a sunny future. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green. The 2013 VW Jetta TDI is the sedan people love to love. It comes with a zippy turbocharged diesel engine that's 90% cleaner burning than previous diesel engines, and it goes farther on a tank of gas than a Toyota Prius. Chapman Volkswagen has a great selection of Jetta TDIs, so choose yours today at chapmantucson.com or in person at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson.
You can always find things around the house to give to Goodwill, but I have a bigger reason to give. My brother, Jim. When Jim was just 6 weeks old, he had a stroke. He had to rewire his brain to do most things we all take for granted. Thanks to Goodwill, Jim has a job and a sense of purpose. You know how they say your donation to Goodwill changes lives? Well, it's true. Goodwill is the best thing that ever happened to Jim. Please donate today.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And our wonderful guest today is Jennifer Deonto Kimberly, who is the director of Seafood Watch at the Monterey Bay Aquarium. And she is giving us lots to think about. Wonderful tools that we can use, ways to improve our health and the health of the ocean. Jennifer, thank you so much for being a part of the show today. You are the show today.
Thank you.
Okay, so one of the things that you do, Seafood Watch, is a network of organizations, fisheries, businesses, big purchasers of seafood that are talking about responsible seafood, both harvesting and consuming. Who's watching them? I hate to ask that, but everybody wants to know. So how do you know this fish farm is doing it the right way and not putting the drain out in a river behind the house?
Sure. There are so many different levels here. So let's start at that one. Let's talk about this producer level, the people who are actually either farming the seafood or catching the seafood. They're all managed, whether that's by a state agency here in the U.S. or a federal agency in Southeast Asia. There are management and regulations, and that's actually one of the things that we assess. We assess, is there some sort of, you know, resource management in place, and is it being enforced? Is there illegal activity? These are all things that help us figure out which category things appear on the Seafood Watch Pocket Guide. So if there's weak management or there's a lack of enforcement, you'll see that reflected in our recommendation to businesses and consumers. So there's that government regulation level, but there's also now a lot of these eco-certification programs that are emerging. I mentioned this a little bit earlier. For capture fisheries, you have the Marine Stewardship Council, and for aquaculture or fish farming, it's the same thing. They have the Aquaculture Stewardship Council. There's the Global Aquaculture Alliance. Various countries have different schemes as well. And they do annual audits to make sure that if you're going to get some sort of eco certification, you have to be adhering to those standards. Now, as more businesses are making commitments to sourcing sustainable seafood and they're accountable to their audiences, be it their board members or other stakeholders or corporate, you know, whoever that person right. who's watching business activity is, they want to make sure that the sources are, you know, fulfilling their obligation and operating the way that, you know, they're claiming to operate. So businesses are watching. They're watching what the regulators are saying. Are things being enforced? They want to see that certificate for eco certification. So that's helping. And then at the point of sale, we still ask consumers to take out that pocket guide, open up that app, or maybe you just memorized a few things from our website, like, you know, stay away from farm salmon, go wild instead, if that's what you've remembered, and go in and ask those questions. You know, it's all about accountability, and it goes throughout that entire sustainable seafood chain.
You know, I used to ring the bell on the show, and then I thought, you know, you got to stop the bell ringing. But that's one of the things that I just feel like ringing a bell to get people's attention, because we can make a difference. Your mm-hmm. program, which is so wildly successful, no pun intended, is making a difference, and all consumers have to do is go in and ask. I say to people that complain about styrofoam containers in restaurants, did you talk to the owner? Did you talk to the manager? Did anything come out of your mouth that would indicate to them their choice is not okay? Now, this is a segue to what you just talked about. You have massive amounts of information, data, reports. What does your team do? How do you develop the recommendations? How do you take all that and come up with lists? I mean, is that an entire another show? But it's like when I think about it and you start talking about it, it's like, well, how do they decide what makes the green, what makes the yellow, and makes the red? It's a lot of information.
It is. It's a great question, and it's one of the reasons why I love working for Monterey Bay Aquarium. The standard of this aquarium is so high. The credibility and the rigor with which we have to assess fisheries and farming operations, it's just the top-notch. So the expectation of our leadership here is that, you know, you're affecting people's livelihoods. You're affecting, you know, sales and businesses. So, you know, you have to be thorough when you are doing these assessments.
Really,
we have
a
team.
Yep.
Yeah. We have a team of about 10 people on staff and a network of about 40 contractual analysts. And those NGOs, those other nonprofit organizations that I mentioned earlier, we're all working together assessing the environmental performance of these fisheries. And I think what's alarming to a lot of consumers to hear is that this is global work. 86% of your seafood is imported. And a lot of that is coming from developing nations
Wow.
with very weak management or no management or very weak enforcement. And I just don't think people realize how much is not coming from the U.S. and not coming from waters close by, coming from, in some cases, very small artisanal fisheries off the coast of India, for example. So it's just our work, and the reason why we work with a lot of contractors is because we want to work with scientists and experts as close to those fisheries as possible, or have vast knowledge and expertise in fisheries or aquaculture themselves. So it's a very rigorous process that we endure in assessing these fisheries, but we're also very committed to transparency. So when you go to seafoodwatch.org and you click on About Us, and you scroll down, you read who we are and how we came about, you will also find links to all of our assessment criteria, our methodology. We just launched a new online Seafood Watch assessment tool. It's at SWAT, S-W-A-T, Seafood Watch Assessment Tool, .seafoodwatch.org. And you could see all the reports that we're working on, all the reports that were written already, and you can comment. So if we're missing some information, you could submit it. On our website at seafoodwatch.org, you can also see the full environmental assessment for every single recommendation. We have nothing to hide. We're kind of the messengers here. You know, we have a criteria for what we think is environmentally responsible, and that's informed by over 100 industry and scientific experts, and that is what we assess fisheries and farms against on a daily basis.
The upside to anything associated with the Monterey Bay Aquarium, I as a consumer say, oh, well, if they said it, it's golden. You don't even have to worry about it. But the flip side of that is such a good thing for you to point out. You have to be, I don't like to use this phrase, but it gets the message, you have to be bulletproof, because there are people out there that are just watching to catch somebody. I mean, it's really sad, but you have to make sure that that stellar reputation is upheld. And boy, does that take a heck of a lot of work. I honor
it
that.
It does.
And not only do you put this report out, what shocked me, and this is one of my best friends is the one that told me about it a long time ago. They travel quite a bit, and she's a big seafood lover. You cover six regions. It's not just what you're going to get in Safeway in, you know, Los Angeles, but you cover six distinct regions. That's even more work and more research and more compiling the data.
I know, but you know, I think what's been really critical to our success, Monterey Bay Aquarium is in Monterey, California, you know, the central coast of California. We can't waltz into the southeast or the northeast and say, okay, this is what you should be eating, the state of Maine. That's not going to fly.
Right,
so what
right.
we needed to do is we needed to find partners in each one of the states. So we have a network of conservation outreach partners, which are typically zoos, aquariums, and conservation groups. And we worked with them and the local academics and fisheries managers and fish farm managers, and we created lists very specific and tailored to each region of the United States. So, you know, you'll see crawfish on the southeast card, and you'll see sand dabs on the west coast card, and you'll see Maine lobster on the northeast card, and you'll see on their Great Lakes card, you know, some of the walleye species. So we really try to recognize and celebrate the local flavors in addition to those bedrock choices that you'll see just about anywhere.
And don't forget Hawaii. I mean, that's one of my places where my friend goes in Hawaii. I mean, major, major seafood consumption out there. And it just, I mean, I know it's like bouncing around a little bit, but I just keep thinking about what you said. 86% of the seafood that people purchase is from basically what I would call unregulated to any real extent. And you might be eating a big, huge hunk of mercury. I'd be really worried about that. I really would. It's like, ooh, let's
the
really be careful
people,
about this.
I also feel like folks are like, oh, you know, we're just doing this in North America. What difference is that going to have if so much seafood's consumed elsewhere? The two top major importers of seafood is the United States and Japan. So we're up there. You know, we're the root of the issue. It's what we do is making a difference. So I just really, again, want to applaud the consumers who realize this and are already taking action, because what we do here in this country, because we're importing from all over the world and we are such a huge player in the market demand, we are truly making a difference.
Really making a difference. And I mean, and I hope this show will make even more of a difference and get the word out, because we will be doing everything we can to get the word out. Let's go back to two things that I want to elaborate on a little bit. When you talk about the NGOs, do they truly work together? In some cases, wouldn't it be set up that they would be competitors, like the two big fishing guys are in business for the same fish? How does that work? Do they have such a clear vision about why it's important for everybody to succeed?
I think when the movement, I'd say about 2007, 2008, when all the businesses started aligning with the various conservation groups, there was a little competition. But we quickly realized when you open up the variety of seafood that these companies are purchasing, there is no way we were going to be able to assess all of these fisheries and farms where they're sourcing from without working together. So we quickly realized, I would say within a year, that the conservation groups, we're calling them NGOs, non-governmental organizations, we all had to work together and align, because we worked so hard to get these businesses to the table and make commitments. If we started coming unhinged at the seams because of competition and trying to make one company's corporate commitment better than the other, we would lose everything, all the leverage that we just worked so hard to build, and all the work of the consumers who supported us in this work. So we are aligned. And, you know, you'll see different organizations brand out there on certain cards and ours on another. But behind the scenes, we're working together. And it's the only way we can really help support the broader business community. And I just think we quickly moved away from competition out of just need to address the pressing problem at hand.
And everybody wins. That's really the truth. I mean, the planet wins, which makes all of us winners just by default. It's like, if we have healthy oceans, we have a healthier planet, we are eating healthier food. I mean, it was ridiculous the day that I really sat down after, I don't know, 3 years of doing this show and all the other things I do about sustainability, and saying, you know what, folks, there's no boundaries on the planet. We made them up, but we're one planet. And when we're depleting the supply, it doesn't matter if it's in Canada or Japan or China, the supply is depleted. Now, Jennifer, what is I know the answer to this because I hopefully always do a lot of research, but there are as many definitions and visions of sustainability out there as there are great programs. I agree with a lot of them, but you've crafted a very important vision of what sustainability is as it relates to Seafood Watch. Could you articulate a little bit on that? That had to take a lot of work because it's really succinct and it's really good.
People try to, this is one of those things where people think it's our Achilles heel. Like, we're going to get them because there's so many definitions of sustainability. But at the end of the day, it's all about making sure that the fish are around in the long term. So if we can figure out a way to fish or farm into the future without jeopardizing the health of the species we're fishing or the integrity of the ecosystem in which they live, we could do this. We could continue to eat seafood while sustaining those populations and sustaining the health of the environment. So we could say it one way, another NGO could say it a slightly different way, an academic can say it a slightly different way. But at the end of the day, it's all about making sure that we're fishing responsibly, farming responsibly. So in 20, 30 years, my daughter and her family are enjoying that same seafood that I was enjoying.
So important. I mean, and I don't know, it seems like the last couple of guests I've had and the ones that I know that are coming up, they're so enforcing the fact that the clock is ticking. I always think of Peter Pan with the croc going, and it's like tick, 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 that tick is getting louder, and hopefully lots more people are hearing. In terms of chefs who buy a lot of food all over the country in this eating out world of ours, how are they responding and how are they participating?
Oh, it's been tremendous. Some of our best champions, you know, chefs are trendsetters. And there are some situations where they created a problem, if you will. So there are some species that were made very, very popular by chefs. And then there, you know, folks tried the Chilean sea bass, folks tried the monkfish, which is not a very attractive fish, but quite tasty. So you might not have bought it yourself at a seafood counter. But they tried it, they fell in love with it and bought it, and the demand for these fish skyrocketed. But the populations couldn't keep up with the hunt. Remember, these are wild animals when they're caught in a commercial fisheries. We are hunting them, and we can only take so much. So the trend-setting chefs quickly realized that, whoa, we too have to take stock and realize the impact we're having. I would say the chef community has been one of the most supportive because they get it. They're close to the products they work with. They care about it. They realize the role they play and the influence they have among consumers and the suppliers. So when they say to their supplier who comes in to try to market them a new species, a lot of the chefs are now saying, whoa, how is that rate with Monterey Bay Aquarium or another organization, or is it eco-certified? They're asking more questions.
Right. Is this a frankenfish? I mean, that was one of my things. Yeah. When I saw that, I was like, what is a frankenfish? I went down the rabbit hole on that one. And you're right. Chefs are trendsetters. They are early adopters. They like to do the different and the unusual. So it's really affirming to hear. And mostly, I see so many trends with foodies, great chefs wanting to do healthier, more locally sourced. I mean, the beat goes on. So that's a great report. We are going to have to take another break. And I always say we're going to have to. I love my sponsors, and I don't want it to come out that way, because without them, Mrs. Green's world would still be in the idea stage. So please stay here with us. I am having the pleasure of interviewing time flying Jennifer Dianto Kimmerly, who is the director of Seafood Watch at the Monterey Bay Aquarium. And while I have a couple of seconds left, I always like to remind everybody to follow me on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Pinterest, because then you get to find out about great programs like this. Please stay here with me. We will be right back.
She's the most exciting thing that's ever happened to you, and you want to spend eternity with her. She deserves nothing less than the best, an Abbott Taylor original. A diamond engagement ring as exceptional as she is that will make her eyes sparkle every time she sees it. Because we design and make our own jewelry, we can create something wonderful for every budget. I'm Abbott Taylor. I'd like to invite you to come see what Abbott Taylor Jewelers has waiting for you. With 35 years and thousands of original jewelry designs, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. We're proud to say, using recycled gold, we have saved over 100 million pounds of toxic waste from this planet. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook, and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
It's got advanced technology. It's got major breakthroughs in technology everywhere you look. It's the 2013 Honda Accord. Hi there, this is Mrs. Green, and I want to share with you that after nearly 40 years of heritage, this is the most stunning Accord ever. The highly respected Automotive Magazine raves that the 2013 Honda Accord offers unparalleled talent of goodness. Please visit Chapman Honda at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson to check it out and see for yourself.
At the University of Arizona, we're putting solar know-how to work. And it's not just our researchers. Our students are on the job as well. Our student solar racing team, using recycled solar cells from NASA, designed and built a car from scratch that gets the equivalent of over 3,000 miles per gallon. Talk about students who will go far. Really, really far. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Did you know that even a donated doorknob can help Habitat for Humanity? Habitat's Habistore accepts donated items like furniture, building materials, and appliances. Donations come from commercial builders, malls, restaurants, hotels, and individuals like you. Then, items are bought by bargain hunters who come across the very things they are looking for, just like the right doorknob. The best part is that Habistore sales generate funds for building homes. Call 520-889-7200 or visit habitattucson.org.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to, and I am sure we're getting a lot of those thought synapses activated today. It's been a great show, and it's going to continue. We have as our guest Jennifer Deonto Kimmerly, who is the very passionate, very excited director of Seafood Watch at the Monterey Bay Aquarium. It's such a pleasure to have you here with us, Jennifer. Okay, so there's lots to cover. Let's start and remember to finish. I get so excited about all the things you're sharing. Give people a shout out about the website, because so many people listen to our show on their computers and they can actually look over while they're listening and keep the show up. What's the best website to find all this great information?
It's easy, seafoodwatch.org. .org, and you can go there and download our pocket guide for consumers no matter what region you're in. We even have a sushi pocket guide for the sushi lovers. You can search for your favorite seafood item. You can see the full environmental assessment, or you can read a sentence about why it's in a particular category. It's got everything you want in one great place.
And it's really easy to find. I mean, we're in the process of redoing the Mrs. Green's World website, which, as you know, is, we're not the Monterey Bay Aquarium. So it's, you know, resources and time. And it's just, I loved your website, because anything I wanted to know, I could find, because it was all laid out perfectly. Now, can we talk a little bit about, I don't know how new it is, but I loved it when I clicked on it, when I was doing my research. You have a bar that says what's new. And of course, I wanted to go and look and see what's new. And do you want to talk a little bit about, or can we talk a little bit about your, one of my favorite subjects, how Seafood Watch and Hess Wines has made the perfect wine pairing? I mean, it brings a smile to my face, because who doesn't want to know what's the perfect wine to drink with your healthy seafood?
I love when the wineries reach out to us, because it's just perfect for us. I remember when we were starting the program and consumers like, ah, we got to go, we got to ask all these questions. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. When you're at a restaurant and the first thing the server does is come up to you and ask you, you know, do you want anything to drink? They hand you the wine list, and you can go back and forth for 10 minutes with the server. What region, red or white, full bodied, smooth, velvety, on and on. You smell of the cork, you're swishing the thing. If you ask a fraction of those questions about the seafood you're about to eat, we're really going to make some progress here with the sustainable
seafood
movement.
That is such a good point. So, I mean, it is such a good point. And you're right. People don't hesitate. Don't mess with me and my wine. It's actually quite annoying to me sometimes, the number of questions people ask about the wine. I say to the server, what would you recommend for a light red? I'm like your low maintenance wine drinker. But that is such a good point. Care enough about what you're going to put in your body to ask the question and then get on to the wine pairing.
I mean, so for me, you know, a wine drinker is a question asker. So it's a good match for the Seafood Watch program, because if they're asking questions about their wine and now their interest is piqued about seafood pairings, okay, I get that. And now they might start asking some questions about their seafood in the future. So working with wineries such as Hess is just, it's a perfect match for us. And of course, the wine is wonderful. So I just think it's a really positive message. You know, sustainable seafood can be delicious. You're doing the right thing. It's enjoyable, and everyone's happy.
And you know, it's so funny. I take notes during each show, and I get off having the best intention. It is such a great blog for me to write with my sense of humor about, you know, you care about your wine, why not about your seafood? And it's really a good thing. I'm not saying I'm going to do it, and I'm not saying I'm not going to do it, but I am putting it on the list of things to do, because I think that would really get people's attention and really stick with them. I really do. Okay, now I want to ask a little bit. I mean, we've got really adequate time left. Do you feel comfortable? She's like, oh God, I'm getting nervous. sharing with us what your thoughts are on the kind of shape our oceans are in and the important role that Monterey Bay Aquarium is playing in hopefully altering that, because it's a really complex issue. And I know about all the garbage and I know about the dead zones. And when I want to get depressed, I can. But if I want to have hope, I think of an organization that is so internationally, globally respected like Monterey Bay Aquarium. And what's the mood there in terms of hope, possibility, and more importantly, change? I mean, I think we have to kind of hurry up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing, the aquarium is all about, you know, hope and change. You know, that's why our mission is to inspire, you know, conservation of the oceans. So that's how we frame everything. It's like, let's go. Let's do something about this. And I do think for some fisheries, like the sharks and some of those tunas and others that we talked about earlier, it is dire. I mean, when 90% of the big fish are gone, and that's what that study you were referring to earlier is published, you know, people can, you know, dispute facts here and there. That's great. That's fine. But the fact of the matter is, when the UN and all these countries are saying it's a problem, they're agreeing that it's a problem, we have to act. I mean, you know, for some of your more avid listeners who really want to dive deep in this, go to the UN's website, go to the Food and Agriculture website. It's you can Google it, it's FAO.org, and look for the State of Fisheries and Aquaculture Report. It is so moving when you read from the UN a statement that says, and I'm going to paraphrase here, we've got a critical situation. You know, species are disappearing. This is something we need to address now. That's just moving to me personally and professionally, that we have a serious situation out there. But what we're seeing is we have these marine conservation organizations. You have movement in the political realm with different governments. But we need something to keep the pressure on, to keep the improvements happening in these fisheries and fish farming operations. That's where movements like Seafood Watch come in. The market demand and the market leverage, the voting with your wallet, is kind of, it just pushes things over the edge. It can create that tipping point. Because, you know, politics can only move so fast, right? Governments can only move so fast. What markets-based initiatives like Seafood Watch does is it helps things move faster. And that's why we're hopeful, because it's working. So we feel like we can catch some of these species that were on the brink and move them in the right direction, because the market is demanding it, not just the government.
The consumer can move today, right now, when they go out this afternoon to go grocery shopping. It's not a government mandate or a regulation or something that has to be passed. We are the power. And I mean, your website is full of, you know, like one of the things I read, and it said something like, you know, our biggest challenges, and then you point out, but this is the way forward, because people don't want to be depressed. It's like, just give me something to do, darn it, and I'll feel better, and I will do it, and it's manageable. I mean, it is, I think there's a part that you have to honor that it could be a state of silent collapse unless we all continue to move forward by our buying choices. The power of the purchase is everything.
Yes. And, you know, things do move out of the red list. And that's a combination of, you know, improved management of these resources and this market-based demand. So we talked a little bit about monkfish earlier when we were talking about chefs and trend setting. You know, the monkfish has been allowed to recover with strong regulation, and people laid off it for a little while, and now it's moved out of the yellow, out of the red into the yellow. And we're starting to see that with some of the Asian farm tilapia as well. So This can work. We just need to give some of these fisheries and species time to make the improvements that need to happen, and then we could start consuming them again once they are operating in a sustainable manner. Sustainable meaning they're operating in a way that they can exist into the long term.
And one of the things that changed, I was thinking, well, I know the population has increased, and that's all part of why the massive consumer index, you know, they're just more consumers. That's one of the facts. But didn't a lot, I'm sure I read on your website, the technology for the way people can fish change drastically. Is that not true?
Yes, it is. So there's some interesting information that when you asked earlier, like personally, what do you feel? About 20 years ago, the amount of fish that we were taking out of the ocean plateaued. And the problem with that is, of course, there's the population's growing, we're eating more seafood, but it hasn't increased really since, you know, the 80s, the amount that we take out of the ocean. But at the same time, we're fishing out farther and we're fishing out deeper and there's more boats in the water. So there's more effort, if you will.
Got it.
And the landings are still staying the same. So to a scientist, that is very, very worrisome. Because we have taken the low-hanging fruit, if you will, the fish along our coast. So now we're going out further and deeper, and we're not able to get more. So we're just shrinking what's left. And that's a dangerous situation to be in. Ask any business person who worries about their inventory. That's a dangerous, dangerous place to be. So that is, you know, one of these things that makes my skin crawl. Like this movement still has a lot of work to do. And resource managers still have a lot of work to do. That's why the continued pressure from the consumers and the businesses is so important.
And we've got to keep the momentum building because you know, as I do, that it's not just when a species disappears, it's the ripple effect. And the fish that ate the species that disappeared and the species that the fish that disappeared ate, it's all part of the same food chain, people. It's like, okay, it's not just that. It's not that you can't just have shark. It's the role that they play in our very fragile, very perfectly balanced ecosystem. And I think that's, you certainly point that out in numerous wonderful ways on the website. So, excuse me. Your thoughts, you have hope, and the people at Monterey Bay Aquarium have hope, and the call to action for our consumers is to get on your website, sign up for the newsletter, donate if they feel compelled. I very rarely do a call for donations, but this is one that is, I feel so wonderfully excited about. We have to keep this going, and it takes money. Let's be honest. It's one of those things that those 40 researchers that you have on contract, plus the ones in-house, they don't work for seafood, I'm sure.
And you know, we need action. We really need consumers to go in and ask those questions at point of sale, because these businesses have huge potential to continue to pressure that supply chain. And that gets all the way back down to the fishermen and the fish farmers. So go into your local retailer, go into your restaurant, ask where that seafood's from, ask if they have a commitment to purchasing only ocean-friendly seafood or sustainable seafood or environmentally responsible seafood, whatever language works for you, but just ask.
And here's what's really great. When I'm out with people, I'm going to ask because I'm going to hear them saying, well, what year is that? And where is it? And was that from the southern region? And is it this? Do you have the grapefruit, you know, fruit forward? And I'm like, okay, let's find out about where the seafood came from. And it'll be a great topic of conversation. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners will do the same thing because they'll make that great wine connection.
That's right.
So it's really, really awesome. And I just, before I forget, I did want to ask, how frequently is, it's one thing to update a mobile app, but do you update the downloadable PDF? Is that updated annually?
Great question. We update the pocket guide twice a year. So the printed piece usually gets updated every January and every July.
Okay.
But we are constantly updating and adding new recommendations. I would say we add a few a month at this pace that we're operating at right now. So I do encourage people, if you have a smartphone, please use the app. And there's one for Droid and there's one for the iPhone platform. And, you know, our mobile site is great too. You can just go to our mobile website, just look for Seafood Watch. You can also just go to our website at seafoodwatch.org, or you can also find us at montereybayaquarium.org.
The Monterey Bay Aquarium, you've got it going on. I mean, it just brings such a smile to my face. I felt myself smiling many times during the show, and we will do our magic social media to get it out there to raise the consciousness. It's so exciting. I mean, I just had a blast for this show, and you were a great guest. You sound as passionate as I do about preserving the planet, and I don't say that all the time. It's like, when I come to Monterey Bay, you can be sure I'll be looking you up so we can give each other a big high five or a hug.
We could do a toast over a nice glass of wine.
Wine. How about that's that? Even better. That's even better. Okay, next week I've got to say Bernard Leiter and Jackie Dunn, authors of a newly released book, Rethinking Money. I had the pleasure of spending an entire day with them this past week. Trust me when I say this is another show you will not want to miss. They're literally taking the world by storm with their new thoughts about how we need to rethink money and how it's connected to sustainability on every level of our being. Thank you for being a part of Mrs. Green's world. Make it a great green week. Thank you, Jennifer Dianto Kimmerly from Seafood Watch at the Monterey Bay Aquarium. You made it a great green week for me.
Oh, thanks for having me on the show. Truly appreciate it. Thank you to all the listeners.
Right back at you.